What is up, everybody? It is a Friday night. This is your SmackDown review. We are 2 weeks away from the Royal Rumble. Tonight's episode felt like a table setter for that show. We had no Roman Reigns tonight. I know that's a big surprise. He was not on the show. The Bloodline, however, did get into the ring with Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight. And it did not go well for them. The babyfaces stand tall ahead of next week's contract signing. So we know that Roman is going to be back next week because they have to make it official. Very average main event, closing out the show. The people got what they wanted to see. They wanted Randy Orton to come out and make the big heroic save when it looked like he had been taken out and wasn't going to come back. We all knew he would. And we got a Shield-style powerbomb of Solo Sikoa through the announce desk, as Randy Orton sent us off the air by pointing down at Solo Sikoa and telling us, screw his big ass. Yeah, that's right. Screw his big ass. The match itself was nothing special. We, however, did get a very good women's match tonight between Bianca Belair and Bayley, which is not surprising given how many times they've worked together before. And they gave them a lot of time, too. They gave them almost 20 minutes on this show tonight. Karrion Kross's new faction has a name. So, too, does Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, although they didn't mention what that name is on television tonight. But we know what the name is. We'll talk about that. Unfortunately, we also had another legitimate injury stoppage. Now, this is the second stoppage or a legitimate injury in as many weeks on WWE television. A few weeks ago on Raw, we had Giovanni Vinci. Tonight, it was Austin Theory and Cameron Grimes. Austin Theory, Cameron Grimes was on the show, briefly. Austin Theory and Carmelo Hayes. They were in the middle of a match, and Austin Theory went for a Spanish fly, a seated Spanish fly from the top rope, and things did not go according to plan. And it was a very scary moment. I'm going to show you the moment where things went off the rails, and I certainly hope that both men are okay. It looked like Theory got the worst of it, but second time in 2 weeks, that's not good. That's not good. Now, 2 weeks ago, it was a dropkick. It was a simple dropkick. Tonight, you look at the move, and it's a move we've seen Theory execute before. It's not like we haven't seen him do that in matches before. And when he hits it, it's very impressive, but it's a very dangerous move. Things can go wrong when you are doing moves like that. Unfortunately, tonight, it went wrong in their match. But tonight's show, I said before that it kind of felt like a table setter. And that's really what tonight's show was. It set the table for what is to come here in these next 2 weeks leading up to the Rumble. We have the contract signing coming up next week. We have this brewing faction war between the Lashley crew and the Karrion Kross crew. We didn't have much of anything in the way of anything new from them tonight. We had another video, and Paul Ellering made an appearance, but that was it. We didn't get much more that we didn't already see last week. The only difference I noticed is that the glove, the white glove that Paul Ellering was wearing on his, I believe, left hand had switched over to the right hand. Pretty sure it was on a different hand last week. I'm not sure if there's any significance to that or not. I don't even know why I noticed that. But other than that, there wasn't anything different about that segment. But they're setting the stage here for what's to come. And that's more important than any individual thing, honestly, that happened on this show tonight. They moved the key stories along. Unfortunately, one member of the Bloodline, who is not doing too well right now, is Afa of the Wild Samoans. Afa was admitted to the hospital with pneumonia last night. Upon his arrival, he suffered a mild heart attack. And as they were evaluating him at the hospital, he then suffered a second small heart attack today. He is said to be doing okay right now. He's not out of the woods yet. He's still in the hospital, but he's said to be doing better. And in a couple of days, they might actually send him home. They want to hold on to him for a little while longer, keep him for observation, make sure everything is okay. I know he was in the hospital last month, something with his valves. He was having his heart valves checked. Obviously, there's some kind of an issue going on there, but best wishes to Afa. Hopefully, he'll be able to get out of the hospital by the end of this weekend. This is your SmackDown review for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster. Please like and subscribe. I don't want to waste any time. I don't know where you guys are, but here in New York, we are in the middle of another storm. It's a rainstorm because the temperature is like 50 degrees outside, but the amount of rain that has been dumped on us this week is ridiculous, and the wind is just blowing like crazy, so the lights were flickering before. I'm hoping that I don't lose power. So if for some reason I suddenly go down in the middle of the review, you'll know why. But hopefully we can make it through okay. SmackDown opened with a recap of last week's triple threat match between Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight. That was to crown a number one contender for Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble until Roman Reigns and the Bloodline ran in and they screwed it all up because they're a bunch of idiots. And they laid waste to everybody. And then Nick Aldis, of course, came out. He let Paul Heyman know to let Roman Reigns know that now he's going to have a fatal four-way match and have to defend his title against all three men at the Royal Rumble. And after the show, they had footage, which they put on their YouTube channel, .com, earlier in the week. But there was footage from an angle that they shot after the show when they got back to the gorilla position. Paul Heyman had to break the bad news to Roman Reigns and let him know what Nick Aldis had told him. And Roman simply told Heyman, fix this. So that was the theme of the show tonight. When Roman Reigns is not here, they rely on Paul Heyman and the other Bloodline members to carry the story. And the story throughout the entire show. And it's good when they do this, even though we've seen so many different shows like this, because Roman Reigns missed so many shows over the past year. Even in terms of the number of matches he had, you can count them all probably on one hand. Maybe it extends to a second hand. He didn't wrestle very much last year, and we had plenty of SmackDowns where Paul Heyman and Jimmy and Jay and Solo, they had to carry the story because Roman was not there. So that was the thread throughout the night. Is Paul Heyman going to be able to fix this? We found out in the opening segment the answer to that question is no. And then Paul Heyman had another problem, which we'll get to. But when this video package was done, they cut live into the arena. And they showed Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso beating up Cameron Grimes in the aisle. Cameron Grimes was on his way to the ring for a match against Grayson Waller. He never got to the ring. He got beaten up in the aisle like all the jabrones they would do this to back in the Monday Night War days when the NWO would come out. They would lay waste to some of the undercard guys and beat them up either in the ring or before they got to the ring. That was the role that Cameron Grimes got to play on the show tonight. Nick Aldis and a bunch of officials and agents came out. I think I saw Daivari in there trying to break things up. Solo and Jimmy, they walked to the ring. Waller and Austin Theory were already in the ring, and when they saw the Bloodline coming down, they said, peace out. And they left the ring. Paul Heyman all of a sudden was in the ring. I don't know where he came from, but Paul Heyman was in the ring as well. He said that we're not the bad guys here. He said the bad guy is that villainous James Bond wannabe, Nick Aldis over there, for putting Roman Reigns in a four-way match at the Royal Rumble, where it is practically guaranteed that he is going to lose his undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Championship, which of course means he won't. So he says that doesn't make Jimmy Uso the bad guy, that doesn't make Solo Sikoa the bad guy, that doesn't make Roman Reigns the bad guy, or the Wise Man the bad guy. The bad guy in this situation is Aldis, Nick Aldis. And Aldis at this point had gotten up on the apron. He's standing on the apron. He grabs the microphone out of Paul Heyman's hand. And he tells Heyman to disabuse himself of the notion that this is a conversation between two equals, because it is not. He said the fatal four-way match at the Royal Rumble is a done deal. This is the second match in as many weeks to be ruined by the Bloodline. He said it will not happen again. And the Bloodline, you can't ruin the main event of tonight's show because the Bloodline is in the main event of tonight's show here in Lincoln, Nebraska. So the Bloodline's in the main event of the show. The folks of Lincoln get to see AJ Styles team with LA Knight and team with Randy Orton to take on all three members of the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa, Jimmy Uso, and Roman Reigns. You know what they ought to start doing? They should have the Bloodline. They won't do this because they'll just be copying off AEW. But I always get a kick out of it when Bullet Club Gold comes out on Collision and they have Card Blade, or, you know, instead of having, if Jay White's not there, they have the cardboard cut out of Switchblade Jay White. So they bring out Card Blade with them. And so Card Blade takes the place of Jay White. I think they have to start doing that with Roman Reigns. We're going to have a cardboard version of Roman Reigns that they can bring to the ring whenever he's not there. Call it whatever you want. Come up with a name for him. Have a little contest online. Try to figure out what to call it. They should probably start to do that. Because Roman Reigns can't wrestle because Roman Reigns is not there. And Paul Heyman, he tried to take the mic away from Aldis. Aldis would not let go of the microphone. So Heyman had to lean in. He told him, you know as well as I know that Roman Reigns is not here in Lincoln, Nebraska tonight. And Aldis said, you're right. Said Roman Reigns has once again started something that he does not seem to want to finish. So the Bloodline will have until the main event tonight. They will have until the end of the show to try to find somebody to team with. Try to find that third man. Who's the third man going to be? It's like Bash at the Beach, only not. Who's the third man? And if nobody steps forward to be the third man, he says, well, then I guess it's going to be a 3-on-2 handicap match. And he said, good luck, Mr. Heyman. Poor Cameron Grimes. You know, I really thought that things were going to be better for him once Vince McMahon was out of the picture, because Cameron Grimes was not a Vince McMahon guy. Cameron Grimes was never going to be a Vince McMahon guy. The only shot that Cameron Grimes had, and still has, is in the hands of Triple H, because Triple H worked with him. He brought him to NXT. He obviously has an affinity for him. He likes the guy. He knows what he brings to the table. If anybody can find something for Cameron Grimes to do, you would think it would be Triple H. And that simply has not happened so far. And it could not happen at a worse time. And I think that's part of the problem. I think part of the... Now, it's not the entire problem. I'm not letting him off the hook here. But here we are now in January. We are heading into the Royal Rumble. Think of all of the top names, all the stars they have on this roster right now, bursting with stars. Cody was just talking about this to Sports Illustrated the other day when they asked him if he still thinks he's going to be in the main event of WrestleMania 40. He goes, you know, there's so many stars on the roster right now at this moment. We just had The Rock come back. We had CM Punk come back. We had Randy Orton come back. We are heading into the Royal Rumble. We are heading into WrestleMania. Cameron Grimes is not a priority for Triple H right now. He hasn't been for a while, but especially not now. This is the worst time that you, if you're Cameron Grimes and you're wondering, hey, you got anything for me? Now is not the time to be asking that question. Because Triple H has his hands full right now with all those other people and all the big stories and all the big stars. Going into the Royal Rumble, going into Elimination Chamber, and then ultimately going into WrestleMania. But my hope is that they will come up with something for him after WrestleMania. Because they did call him up to the main roster. Remember, he was in purgatory for a long time. I don't even remember the last time he was on NXT. He left NXT, and then he was just gone for a while before they ever called him up to SmackDown. So it's even worse because he's been doing nothing for an even longer period of time. They really need to find something for this guy to do. All right, he may not be a top guy, but that doesn't mean you cannot find a spot for him on the show. He has something to contribute either as a babyface or a heel, because he was a great annoying little shit on NXT when he was a heel. And then he just naturally became a babyface because the people liked him. And I think the same thing can be replicated on the main roster. Only without Ted DiBiase. You don't need the $1 million man to try to get this guy out. So hopefully they'll come up with something for him, but it's not going to happen at least until after WrestleMania. Because right now, and right now is not the time to be worrying about Cameron Grimes. And I say that as somebody who likes Cameron Grimes. Nick Aldis continues to be great in this role of general manager. So many times over the years, we've had the spineless authority figure. Adam Pearce was always very deferential to Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, pretty much letting them do whatever they want. And so it's nice now to have a GM standing up to the bloodline and showing a backbone. And I just think he's been a great addition so far in this role to the show. In a role that was very played out for a very long time. And they went away from the GMs for a number of years. And it just felt like, okay, now would be a good time to try to get back to that. But if it's just going to be the Adam Pearce thing that he's been doing over the last few years, then what's the point? And even Adam Pearce on Raw, all of a sudden, it's like he's got this new lease on life. He's not letting people, you know, walk all over him, and he's laying down the law. So it's been nice. It's been refreshing to have authority figures that actually feel like they have authority instead of just being a lackey. Backstage after a break, Paul Heyman told Jimmy and Solo, don't worry about finding a partner for tonight's main event. Jimmy was worried. Solo said he's never worried. Which is why this guy's going to live to be 100, because he doesn't stress out about anything. I wish I could be more like Solo Sikoa. I worry about everything. I'm not going to last very long if I keep doing that. But Solo, man, he played it cool. He doesn't let anything bother him. Heyman said he hasn't been able to get Roman Reigns on the phone yet, but not to worry. He said there's a locker room full of men that have been kissing his tuchus, trying to become part of the bloodline. He is certain that someone will want to team with them tonight. We had Santos Escobar, who now has himself a new group. He now has himself a new LWO, the Legado World Order. I don't know if that's their new official name, but that's the name he used on commentary. With Angel and Humberto, who are now back on the main roster. It was Angel and Humberto in tag team action against Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro. Escobar stayed out there to do commentary. Angel and Humberto, they ended up on the floor. Wilde and del Toro, they hit stereo dives out to the floor. Back in the ring, Angel low-bridged del Toro as he hit the ropes, and he took a nasty spill to the floor. And Angel followed that up with a running knee strike to take us into a commercial break. Angel and Humberto, they continued to double-team Del Toro. He eventually escaped. He made the tag to Joaquin, who hit a spiked DDT on Angel. Humberto, though, broke up the pin attempt. Del Toro and Humberto ended up on the floor. And Joaquin Wilde went up to the top rope. Angel recovered. He crotched Wilde on the top turnbuckle. And Garza and Carrillo, they delivered a double press slam from the middle rope. They pressed this guy above their head, and they dumped him all the way down to the mat. So that was a great spot. Humberto followed up with a sit-out powerbomb that got him a close two count. Wilde recovered. He hit a poison rana to Angel. Del Toro hit a tornado dive onto Humberto on the floor. And then Carlito's music hits. Carlito's shitty music hit. And Santos Escobar threw his headset down. He stood up. He's looking at the aisle because he thinks Carlito's coming out that way. Of course, he came from behind. Not from the aisle way. So he jumped him from behind. Carlito fought Escobar off into the crowd. Meanwhile, back in the ring, Angel countered a victory roll attempt by sitting down. He countered it into a sitting pinfall. He grabbed a hold of the bottom rope. The referee somehow did not see this. And he was holding on from the count of one. Referee didn't see it. He counted the pin. Angel and Humberto get the win. The finish fell flat. I liked the match, though, but the finish fell flat. They've had exactly one match so far since they got called back up to the main roster. And already these two feel like more important figures on this show than they did their entire first run on the main roster. They already feel more important than they did their entire previous run when they were up as Los Lotharios. And they're already being booked more seriously than they ever were the first time either. So this is a step in the right direction. Now, one person who we have not yet seen on TV, it's not even been confirmed that he's coming in, but he's coming in, is Andrade. Andrade has already said publicly his farewell. He had very nice glowing things to say about Tony Khan and AEW. He posted a very nice farewell message on social media. So he's gone. And I know he worked for CMLL recently, but that's a temporary thing. I think he had a date booked with GCW in the near future. He had to pull out of that date. People are wondering, ooh, I wonder why that is. He's coming into WWE. He's coming in to work for the same company as his wife. The only question is, when is he coming in and what brand is he going to be on? SmackDown would make sense because that's where Charlotte is. Well, not right, not for the next 9 months, but when she comes back, I presume, unless they make her a free agent, Charlotte is going to be on SmackDown. So wherever she goes, it's like Becky and Seth being on Raw, Cross and Scarlett being on SmackDown. That's where Andrade is going to be. So let us assume that he is going to end up on SmackDown. The question is, what do you do with Andrade? They may hold off on him until the Royal Rumble and debut him as a surprise in the Rumble match. But if he does end up on SmackDown, I would love to see him and Zelina Vega paired back up. I thought they made for a great pairing the first time. I'd love to see the two of them back together. Do you have Andrade link up with the LWO on the babyface side? You know, Zelina recruits him into the LWO to help them out against Escobar and his new crew. I don't know if that works because Rey Mysterio is going to be back in the next few weeks. And then on the LWO side, you've already got Rey, you've got Carlito, you've got Wild, and you've got Del Toro. So if you add Andrade to the mix, now it's all lopsided. It would make more sense for him to actually join with Escobar as a heel and face off against the LWO. Because here's the thing about Andrade, and if you watched him during his run in AEW, then I don't see how you wouldn't have seen this. He needs to be paired up with somebody so that they could cut the promos. His promos are lacking. So he can't just go out there on his own. He needs to have someone with him, whether he's part of a faction and Escobar does the talking, or if he's with Zelina and she does most of the talking. It's going to work out better for him if he's with someone. I say get the best of both worlds. I say put him with Escobar and have Zelina turn heel, leave the LWO, and go over to the Escobar faction. And she could be with Andrade on the other side. Because does she really need to stay in the LWO? Why does she need to stay as a babyface? Wherever Andrade goes, I hope she goes too. And I think he'll end up on the heel side. That's where I would put him. I would put him with the Escobar crew. I like that idea better. Backstage, we go to Nick Aldis. And he was sitting in his office with Carmelo Hayes. And Carmelo Hayes was about to shoot his shot. And he was about to bring up the Royal Rumble, I suppose, because he wants to be in the Rumble match, because why else would he bring that up? Before he could even say the words Royal Rumble, they were interrupted by Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. And Waller was bragging about winning his match earlier by forfeit. They asked what Melo is doing here, and Hayes said the same thing. Waller said that you're not at my level. Hayes said, you're right, I'm not at your level. I'm above you. I'm a level above you. Because if you want to run it back, because the two of them have a history together. All right, I think was Waller's last match in NXT where he broke his leg, I believe, was against Carmelo Hayes. Hayes said, if you want to run it back, we can do it tonight. All of a sudden, Waller got all hesitant and said, well, you know, I've already wrestled the match tonight. You know, the whole cool down, heat up, warm up thing. I'm not ready, but I'll tell you what, my boy here, Theory, would love to get in the ring with you. And that was news to Austin Theory, but he convinced them, come on, you'll do fine. And Nick Aldis said that, I like the sound of that, and he made the match official. And then Hayes looked at Theory, he said, A-Town down. He goes, A-Town down bad tonight. How true those words ended up being. A-Town down bad. Good to see Carmelo Hayes still sticking around SmackDown. I wasn't sure if they were just going to have him up there for the U.S. title tournament, send him back down. He's still working in NXT. All roads are going to lead to him against Trick Williams at Stand and Deliver WrestleMania weekend. So he's not done yet with NXT. The fact that he's still hanging around SmackDown, though, is a positive sign. It means that this is going to be the beginning of a full-time main roster call-up for him, which is overdue, right? He should be on the main roster. Bron Breakker should be on the main roster. And I think he will be very soon. So there's no reason for him not to be. If SmackDown is the place that he's going to end up, I think that's great. But again, he's not quite done just yet with NXT. In fact, he's supposed to tag, I think, with Trick Williams in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic next week. Unfortunately, after tonight, I'm not sure if that'll be the case. Backstage, although DEH just chimed in the live chat and said WWE informed Theory and Melo are okay. So that is good news. I'm going to get to their match in a little bit here, but that is great news. Backstage, Paul Heyman offered Carlito an apple. I love how he has an apple. And this is his way of trying to entice Carlito to join with the Bloodline and be their third man in the main event. I got you an apple. It's really raising the stakes here. Carlito said the only fight he was interested in was with Santos Escobar. He did take the apple, though. He did take the apple. Kevin Patrick and Corey Graves introduced the video package, recapping Kevin Owens winning the U.S. title tournament and then knocking out Logan Paul after the match was over. Then they cut to a Logan Paul promo that they clearly taped last week. And he admitted as much in the promo because he said he wasn't there tonight, but yet it looked like he was standing in the backstage area. So they didn't explicitly have him say that, hey, I'm recording this 1 week earlier. But that's pretty much what they did here. He has sporting a nice shiner on his face from the Kevin Owens punch. He said the cast on Owens' hand is a weapon. He called Owens cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater. Wow. I don't think I've heard that since I was maybe five. Cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater. Jingle bells, Batman smells. Here's another one. Oh, do you know the Muffin Man? That one seems kind of appropriate. The Muffin Man, that lives on Drury Lane. Actually, he lives in Chicago. He said if Owens pulls up to the Royal Rumble with that cast on, their match is going to be off, and he would sue him. He was going to sue him into the ground. So Owens is going to have to fight him without the cast on. And there you go. I mean, there's the built-in excuse now for Kevin Owens to lose at the Royal Rumble because Kevin Owens is not winning the United States Championship. And so that broken hand, he's going to fight valiantly, but in the end, it's going to be the broken hand that ends up being his downfall. I can see the bullshit finish coming from a mile away. We got a video that aired from earlier today. I like this, actually. With Butch and Tyler Bate. They were sitting in a cafe somewhere in the arena, I'm sure. You saw people sitting in the background. They were sitting somewhere in a cafe, in a cafe, sharing coffee. Bate tried to point to all the fun they had in their tag match last week. Tyler Bate made his main roster debut. He was tagged with Butch against Pretty Deadly, if you didn't see it. And by the way, that is his main roster call-up. That was not a one-week thing. He is a permanent official member of the SmackDown roster, which is great to see. He was talking about all the fun they had in their tag match last week. He pointed out that he knows Butch is feeling very lost right now. He's searching for his identity. He tried pitching him on meditation. That became his gimmick in NXT. He was always meditating. So I guess that's carried over now to the main roster. Butch told him to shut up. And he said, Pretty Deadly is behind him. The Brawling Brutes are also behind him. And everything that they have done together in the past is also behind him. He goes, now it's time for each of us to go do our own thing. And Bate said, look, we have a chance to show the world what British strong style is all about. He told Butch to look inward. He told Butch to remember his name. He told Butch to remember who he was. And he asked him, who were you when we were together back in Blackpool? And the video ended with Butch staring off into the distance with this like scowl on his face. And it looked like he was about to say something. It looked like he was about to say a certain name when the video ended. Pete Dunne. You used to be Pete Dunne. I'll say it a little bit louder in case he's not aware. Oh, he's aware. He's aware. It's about time. Pete Dunne is coming back. It's only a matter of time. I do like that they're taking this approach, though. It would have been very easy for him to just show up 1 week or do a quick interview in the back. And with Kathy Kelly and say, from now on, call me Pete, or some bullshit like that. They're taking the time to tell a story here as far as who he really is, who he used to be, and why he's going back to the way that he used to be. It's good. It's good character building on this show. They do a lot of these segments in NXT. Sometimes they're corny, but they're also very effective. So it's good that they're taking this approach, and it's about damn time that we get Pete Dunne back here on TV. We had Bianca Belair one-on-one against Bayley, who had all the members of Damage Control in her corner, and they pushed Bayley into this match. If you remember, it was a backstage segment last week. Bianca walked up to them and said, "You're not going to win the Royal Rumble because I'm going to win the Royal Rumble." And then she walked away, and the other members of Damage Control said, "Well, you know, as the leader, EO thinks, and we all think, that you need to take care of this. You got to take care of the Bianca problem. All these plans you're coming up with where you're going to win the Royal Rumble and we're going to win the women's tag team titles, like, it's all going to go up in smoke if Bianca wins the Rumble. So you've got to go out there and take care of her." Hence, we have the match here tonight. And no surprise here, these two work really well together. I mean, God knows they worked together so many times in the past, it would be hard for them not to. So yes, these two do work well together when they're in the ring. Bianca had control early. She hit a trio of body slams. Then she ran at Bayley. Bayley tripped her, though, and had her draped on the middle rope. And then she started shouting to the other members of Damage Control. And that allowed Bianca to take control back. She hit a springboard splash to Bayley, who was on the outside. So she propelled over the top rope, took her down. That took us into a commercial break, after which Bayley had control. Bianca came back with a spine buster. Bayley fought back with a running knee strike. And Bayley then tied Bianca's braid to the bottom rope. You know, how is it that after all this time, I mean, I know we're kayfabing here, but after all this time, you would think that there would be some heel on the roster who would say the hell with this, and they would come out with a big pair of Brutus Beefcake clippers, and they would cut that fucking thing off. No one's even tried. Have they even tried? I don't think anybody's even tried to do it yet. But here she found a way to use it to her advantage. She tied the braid to the bottom rope, and then Bayley ran at her, and Bianca used the braid to trip her, and she freed herself. She lifted Bayley for the KOD on the outside, but instead she threw her into the ring post. Back inside, Bianca hit a series of shoulder tackles and then a vertical suplex. She went for a back handspring moonsault. Bayley, though, got the knees up. Bianca got a reset. She did hit the move on the second attempt. She picked up Bayley for a KOD, but Bayley escaped, and she launched Bianca into the second turnbuckle. And then she went up top. She hit her giant diving elbow drop. Only got two count out of it. She tried for another pinfall using the rope. She got caught, though, by the referee. Unlike Angel in the tag team match earlier, this time the referee caught him, or caught her. Bayley then threw Bianca out of the ring right in front of Damage Control, and she faked the knee injury to distract the referee, and she's motioning. She's telling the members of Damage Control, go ahead, beat her up, gang up on her. Instead, they just stood there. They stood there and they did nothing, and Bayley in the ring looked frustrated by this because all they did was stand there. Then she got caught with a spear by Bianca, and then Bianca followed up with a KOD to pick up the win. 17 minutes this match went. It's been a while since we have had a women's match on this show that got that much time. The last time I can remember was the match between Asuka and Io, and that was back in like September. So it's been a while. They gave them a lot of time. I thought it was a very good match. Really good stuff here. Bayley, you know, I liken this whole slow burn turn here. Bayley being kicked out of Damage Control is like the steamroller scene from the first Austin Powers movie, where the steamroller is coming for the security guard, but it's like 50 feet away, and the security guard is still standing there anyway, screaming, "No, no," as the steamroller is coming towards him. And they're telling him to get out of the way, and he's just standing there. So you know it's coming. And there's nothing you can do. You just stand there and wait for it, and wait, and wait, and wait. But it's inevitable that Bayley is going to get run over here. That's exactly what this is like. How long has this been going on for? What was the first time that we thought Bayley was first going to get either kicked out of Damage Control or the Damage Control was going to break up? It's got to be almost a year now. We've been talking about this. 9 months, maybe? And we're still waiting. After a commercial, we were in the back. Damage Control was standing around. Io was saying something in Japanese to Dakota Kai. And Bailey walked up to them and was wondering, what the hell? What happened out there? And Dakota pulled her aside and said, look, we couldn't interfere because the referee was looking right at us. You know, you would have gotten disqualified. She said, we thought that you would be good to face Bianca on your own. And this plan that Bailey came up with for all the members of Damage Control to win all the gold, including her, to win the Royal Rumble, Dakota said, we also think that you should be doing that on your own. Bailey said, all right, but, you know, we're stronger together. And Dakota just basically said, don't worry about it. You got this. You'll be fine. Poor Bailey. Poor Bailey has no friends. Or does she? That's the million-dollar question. We know that Bailey is going to end up on the outside. We know the turn is coming. Does Bailey win the Royal Rumble? And then she has to make a decision about who she wants to challenge for the championship at WrestleMania. Or does she not win the Rumble? Do some of the other members of Damage Control eliminate her from the Royal Rumble? And then Bailey is like, what the hell? I thought we had a plan here. And they do the turn after the Rumble. That's also a possibility, but we know that she's going to be excommunicated soon enough. And she's going to be outnumbered. Because if it's going to be Bailey possibly challenging Io Sky at WrestleMania for the women's title, which is, I think, the direction here, you've got Io, Asuka, Kairi, Dakota. And by the way, Dakota Kai should not be that far off from being medically cleared. I remember months ago she said maybe the Royal Rumble, and so here we are in January. She's probably not too far off from being able to get back in the ring. Bailey is going to need friends. And there just so happens to be one very big female free agent that we, as far as we know, she's a free agent. Now, if some of these reports are to be believed, she's already signed and they're just waiting to debut her on Dynamite. It hasn't happened yet, though. I mean, my God, I've been hearing about her going to AEW for 6 months and it still hasn't happened. What are they waiting for? The Royal Rumble seems like the perfect time for a Sasha Banks return to WWE. But if not, there's another option, because there's another familiar face that's going to be coming back very soon to WWE. She happens to be defending her Knockouts title on the TNA pay-per-view tomorrow night. Her name is Trinity. Naomi is going to be back very soon, possibly by the end of this month, in WWE. I don't know if it'll be in time for the Rumble or not. But she's coming back. Now, she doesn't have the kind of friendship on air that Sasha did with Bayley, but if not Sasha, there's always Naomi, right? I'm very curious to see how they're going to work this as far as when the Bayley turn happens and if they have people there to back her up. Or does she have to go it alone? It's just the story lends itself perfectly to a Sasha Banks return. It's just hard for me to believe that that's not what we're going to get here. But I've heard so many conflicting reports about her status and who she signed with or didn't sign with. I've said before, I would tell people this too, not to believe a fucking thing until you see this woman on television. There are so many conflicting reports. Now it looks like she's with AEW, but until she shows up and walks out there on stage through that tunnel, do not believe a word of it until you see it with your own eyes. And until that time happens, there is still the possibility that, yes, we could see these two friends reunited on TV. The story is just too perfect. And if it's not Sasha, then you know what? This is an opportunity for Bailey for a change to get some shine and not be in the shadow of Sasha Banks if it turns out that she is going to AEW. But Bailey is going to be turning babyface. She's been a heel for 5 years now. Can you believe that? 5 years. She is overdue for a babyface turn. I don't think a babyface turn involves the pigtails and the wacky, wailing, inflatable tube men, although I would love to see the tube men come back. But she's going to be going babyface. And so if it's not Sasha, maybe she'll get a chance to shine on her own. Maybe that's not such a bad thing. But man, the story, it's right there. It's the timing could not be more perfect.
This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Imagine for a moment, those of you with kids, you're out with the family at the mall, you need to use the bathroom. So you leave your kids with a total stranger while you go take care of your business, right? You would never, ever do that, because that would be very stupid. How are you supposed to trust a total stranger with something so precious to you? Well, think of your data the same way. Why leave something so important in the hands of someone you might not be able to trust? That's why you need to be using ExpressVPN. Every time you connect to a network that's not encrypted, whether it's at an airport, a cafe, a hotel, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can gain access to and steal your personal data, your passwords, even your financial details. ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, so hackers can't steal your data. Hackers can make serious cash selling your personal information on the dark web. But ExpressVPN has made it easier than ever to keep your information safe. All you have to do is fire up the app, click one button, and you're instantly protected. And ExpressVPN works on all your devices like laptops, phones, tablets, so you can stay secure on the go. Secure your online data today at expressvpn.com/solomonster and get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, expressvpn.com/solomonster.
Now we had a response video from Kevin Owens, where he said that if Logan Paul wants to call the cast on his hand an unfair advantage, that's fine. We both know that his broken hand is not a liability for Logan. It's a liability for Kevin Owens. And really, though, he said, we need to talk about this face-to-face. So he invited him next week to come on the Kevin Owens show so they can have a conversation. And it was confirmed later in the show, it is now official, that Logan Paul will be back on the show next week to be on the Kevin Owens show. So how about that? We're going to get another show with Logan Paul and Roman Reigns in the building at the same time. How about that? How often does that happen? Not very often. Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, they were out to the ring. No suit jackets. Their shirts were partially open. Their sleeves were rolled up. They looked like they meant business. They looked like badasses walking down to the ring like they were fixing for a fight. They had something on their mind. Lashley talked about Karrion Kross's new crew jumping them last week and them thinking that it might give them the upper hand, but oh no. Said when they deal with things, they do it face to face. They don't go lurking in the shadows. They roll up their sleeves, they clench their fists, and they get ready for a fight. And he told them to come out so they could settle this right here, right now. The lights began to flicker, as they've been doing here tonight. The lights began to flicker. I looked around to see if maybe Paul Ellering was here, but he wasn't here. And this week, the white glove was on the other hand. Paul Ellering walked out by himself on stage, and then he pointed up at the Tron, and they played a video from Karrion Kross and Scarlett. Kross said that his purpose the last few years has been showing corruption by breaking people on the inside. Well, now it's time to break people on the outside. Said Bobby and company are going to be deconstructed, and now he has found his purpose with Akam and Rezar, the authors of Pain, and the most sadistic man in the wrestling business, Paul Ellering. Paul Ellering. Actually, the most sadistic man in the wrestling business is probably Darby Allin. All the abuse that he puts himself through. But he said that Paul Ellering is the most sadistic man in the wrestling business. And they would bring destruction to SmackDown. We are the final testament. So they have a name. The final testament against the pride. Now, we did not hear the name mentioned on television tonight, but that is the new name of the faction with Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. They are the Pride. WrestleVotes first mentioned this yesterday, and then Bobby Lashley has it up now in his bio on Twitter that he is the leader of the Pride. And he has the fist emoji. I guess like a pride of lions. Been a lot of people debating about the name. Oh, I like the name. Oh, the name sucks. Oh, what a crappy name. That's the best name they can come up with. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. I'm going to inject some common sense here into this debate. You know what I thought when the Judgment Day first started? I thought, man, that's a stupid fucking name for a faction. All I could think about was the pay-per-view by that name. The Judgment Day, right? We had the Judgment Day pay-per-view. Why are you taking a pay-per-view name and you're giving it to a faction? The Judgment Day? What kind of name is that for a faction? That's stupid. And now the Judgment Day, I'm surprised we're not going to get the interruption here on the from the Super Chat, interrupted every week. The Judgment Day is the top faction on Raw. They've dominated the airwaves on Monday nights now for months, even with a stupid name, because let's be honest, it is a stupid name. So that didn't really have any kind of negative effect on them or the push that they've been getting on Monday Night Raw. Even if you think that this name is stupid, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter if it is a stupid name, if it's not a stupid name. The bottom line is this. They tried to turn them heel. The fans rebelled because the fans like Bobby Lashley and they like the Street Profits. The fans kept cheering Bobby Lashley. They do not want to boo this man. So now they've relented and clearly they're going to be babyfaces because the people like them, regardless of what they call themselves. So at the end of the day, it's going to boil down to the booking. It's going to boil down to how they are positioned and portrayed on television, whether or not they get over or not. The name of the group is not going to make a lick of difference in this situation. So it doesn't matter. And frankly, I don't think the name is all that bad anyway. So I think people are bitching here for the sake of bitch. I've heard a lot worse. The Core. Remember The Core? You want to go through some crappy fucking faction names, we could do that. Okay? The Pride is fine. Look, I went to Hofstra, okay? I went to Hofstra, the Hofstra Pride, right? I'm an alum. That's me. I'm all about Hofstra Pride, so I'm a little partial to the name. I don't mind. Maybe that's why I don't mind the name so much. It's all about Hofstra Pride, so nothing wrong with some pride. I don't see what the big deal is. The Judgment Day are doing fine, and they'll do fine, too. But as far as this segment is concerned, really not much to the segment. I mean, we already basically had the same thing last week. You know, only this time we had Cross in the video actually naming Akam and Razor. Or Razor. I think I'm watching Secret of the Ooze with Razor and Toka. That was really the only difference here in this segment. Otherwise, it's kind of like the Adam Cole thing on Dynamite this week when he came out and basically cut the exact same promo that he cut on Dynamite last week. And I'm sitting here going, what was the point of this? We already got this 1 week ago. It's basically the same thing here. But as far as Cross, I think the presentation is fine. The presentation is very good. With Karrion Kross, even if you go back to his time in NXT when he first debuted there, his presentation was spectacular. They gave him the entrance, and they had Scarlett coming out, and just everything about it was great. Then he got called up to the main roster, and he looked like something out of a really bad fucking S&M club. I don't even want to think about that, okay? I don't even want to go back to that. He got fired. He got rehired. Ever since he came back, there's nothing wrong with his presentation. The presentation is top-notch. It's never been a question about presentation. It's been a question about the booking, but it's been a question of substance. The substance just isn't there. That is going to have to change in order for this to be any different. Because at some point, you can have the greatest entrance, and you can have the spooky effects, and you can have the hot girl, and you can have the whole package. But when you come out there and they put a microphone in your hand, or when you come out there and the bell rings, you have to be able to deliver. And he just has not been able to deliver to this point. You know how I know that? Because he hasn't gotten over. That's how I know. Because whatever he's been doing, if it was working, then they wouldn't have had to reboot him for a third or fourth time, however many times now that it is. That's why I say this is probably his last shot at it. This is probably his last bite at the apple. It's sink or swim. I think that this is going to give him a better chance, you know, surrounding himself with other people, him being able to lead his own faction. I like that idea. I hope it works. But at some point, you can't just be all about presentation and no substance. There's got to be more to it than that. When that happens, he will get over and he will find success. And if that doesn't happen, then he won't. It's just that simple. I hope he does. We had Pretty Deadly in the back. They walked up to Paul Heyman. They began their pitch by calling him Lord Heyman. And they say, we have a proposition. He goes, we're the best tag team here, and we think that we would make a great team. And they put their arm around Heyman, right? They're making the pitch for them to be part of the main event with the Bloodline against Randy Orton and AJ Styles and LA Knight. And Heyman says, you do realize that we only need one person. We don't need the two of you. We only need one of you in the match. They didn't realize that. So now they have a change. All of a sudden, their whole attitude, their whole demeanor changes. And they act like, actually, we had something else to do. And so they bid him farewell, and off they went. And Heyman put his head back in his hands as he continues to struggle to find somebody to team with Jimmy and Solo. We got a Carmelo Hayes vignette putting him over that took us into his entrance for the next match, one-on-one with Austin Theory. After a break, though, first, while they stood in the ring, I guess, or Hayes was already out in the ring. So he had to wait because we had yet another Paul Heyman segment to cut to the backboard. It was Bobby Lashley. And it was the Street Profits. They were walking through the hallway when they came upon Paul Heyman. And Paul Heyman had a big smile on his face. Bobby, my friend, right? We go back a ways. We go back a long ways here. Yeah, they go back a ways, all right. I can think of a certain December to Dismember pay-per-view. I could think back to a certain Extreme Elimination Chamber match where I believe Paul Heyman wanted... Who did Paul Heyman want to win that match? Wasn't it someone else? I'm trying to think if it was Lashley that he wanted. No, it was Punk. That's what it was. It was CM Punk. That's what it was. I believe Paul Heyman wanted CM Punk to win the Elimination Chamber match. And Vince McMahon had other ideas. Vince McMahon wanted Bobby Lashley to be the ECW World Champion. Because there was this great idea where I think he was going to have Punk tap out the Big Show or something, maybe in the Anaconda Vice. Anyway, Vince McMahon got his way. And Bobby Lashley won the Elimination Chamber, and Paul Heyman was gone for how many years? 8 years? 6 years? He was gone for a while. He was gone for about 6 years before we saw him again in WWE. So yeah, Heyman and Lashley, they go back a ways. So he was trying to butter up to him and said, look, you might want to work out your aggression by teaming up with Jimmy and Solo in the main event tonight. And Lashley said, the only time I want to be in the ring with the Bloodline is when I am standing across from Roman Reigns. Preach. I can't believe that it's been over 3 years. In these 3 years, not one time have we seen Roman Reigns one-on-one with Bobby Lashley. In over 3 years, you couldn't work a program at some point between Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley? Apparently not. And I don't know if he'll be lucky enough to be one of Roman's five opponents that he'll have this year. Maybe if he gets in early, he'll throw his name in the hat. Maybe he'll get picked. So there was a scary spot early in this match. Not the only one. There was a scary spot where Hayes, he booted Theory between the ropes. And Theory was kind of hanging over, I think, the middle rope. And Hayes did his fadeaway leg drop that he does. Then, after the fadeaway, he jumped up and hit a leaping DDT, and he spiked Theory. The spot was that he would spike Austin Theory on the ring apron on the way down. And he did, but the way that Theory caught the apron, it's like he caught like his shoulder, like the very edge of the ring apron. And I thought he was hurt. I mean, he hit the floor. I was like, holy shit. But he was okay. It was scary. Although not as scary as what was to come. They come back from the commercial. Theory hit a rolling shotgun dropkick. He tried to suplex Carmelo Hayes. Hayes, though, countered with a suplex of his own. Hayes followed up with a springboard clothesline and a faceplant for a two count. And the two of them traded some pin attempts back and forth. Hayes hit a super kick. So now Austin Theory has Carmelo Hayes seated on the top rope. So picture like if somebody gets crotched, right? And they're just kind of hanging there on the top rope. So Hayes is on the top rope. Theory is standing in the ring. We've seen him do this before. And he has pulled this off successfully in the past, but it's a very dangerous move. It's very impressive when he hits it. But it takes perfect timing. A lot of athletic ability on his part to do the vertical leap and follow through. It's very impressive, but it takes cooperation also with both men. Theory jumps up, does a vertical leap. And the idea is that he lands with either his ass or his legs on the top rope. He grabs the other guy, and then he takes him over, and he hits a Spanish fly off the top rope. That's the spot. He went to go execute the Spanish fly, and things went terribly wrong. And you could tell right away that things went terribly wrong because it looked like they both landed on their fucking heads. If you watch it back, Hayes, he tucked his head at the last minute, so he didn't spike himself on top of his head. I mean, I'm sure his neck doesn't feel too good. Theory, though, he landed on top of his head. But it looked like both of them did. It was just a very awkward landing. Referee Ryan Tran immediately recognized that, oh shit, that didn't look good. And he knew something was wrong. He threw up the dreaded X sign, and he called for an end to the match. This is the second legitimate injury stoppage that we have had on a WWE show in the last 2 weeks. We had Giovanni Vinci the week before last on Raw on a simple dropkick. Vinci was springboarding out of the corner, and Kofi Kingston just jumped up and hit a dropkick, and he kicked him hard in the jaw. That coupled with the impact on landing, he smacked the back of his head on the mat. The referee saw this, and the referee looked at Vinci, and he instantly recognized that something was wrong. He instantly recognized that this guy was seeing stars, and he called for an end to the match. And Vinci, I believe, is out with a concussion right now, so he did get concussed, and they said on Raw Monday night he's going to be out for at least a few weeks. So that happened on Raw, not this past Monday, but the Monday before. And then tonight, we have this. And I will applaud the referee here just as I did on Raw 2 weeks ago. I applauded the referee then. I gave him a lot of credit. I will do the same here for the referee in this match. He did the exact right thing. That is what should happen in a situation like that. You know, the referee's right there. He can see better than anybody else can. He's the one who's reporting back, right? Far as okay, is he okay, is he not okay? He's right there, he can see it. He could tell that something is wrong. You could tell by his body language and him throwing that X up and calling over the doctor. And so in a situation like that where both of them, in this case, unfortunately, it was both of them who landed that way, he did the right thing. I mean, that's what you need to do in a situation like that. It looked also upon the landing, and here's the still shot. And it's not the best quality, but this will give you a sense of how scary it looked. And I mean, the expression there on Grayson Waller's face outside says it all. I mean, the way they landed, Hayes, his head landed on top of Theory's head, right on his face. So their two heads basically collided. And Austin Theory clearly took the worst of it. Just by looking at it, you could tell he took the worst of it. Hayes immediately rolled over. And he looked at Theory. He looked over at Theory as if to see, is he alive? Is he okay? But Theory is the one who looked like he was just out to lunch. And the referee saw the same thing, and he called for an end to the match. Now, there was somebody in the chat before who said that WWE has reported that both of them are okay. I am just checking here very quickly to see if there is anything that I can. So here is, I'm just going to read you the update here. This is the update on X from WWE following their match tonight on SmackDown. Austin Theory and Carmelo Hayes were evaluated for injuries. They both suffered face contusions, and both men will be okay. So that's great news, because that looked like it was, that's just a fucking disaster. That is a disaster in the making. And the problem is, you know, when you do moves like that, there are so many things that can go wrong. You know, with Vinci, like I said, dropkick, simple move. Here, it's hard to have control over your body when you're doing a rope-assisted Spanish fly, right? These are the things that can happen. I'll tell you what, I'm less surprised they got hurt on this move and more surprised that Theory didn't get hurt on that DDT on the ring apron earlier in the match before the commercial break. The fact that they got hurt on that move doesn't shock me. I'm more shocked that he didn't get hurt earlier. He's very lucky. He's lucky two times, because apparently he's doing okay. And that's really all that matters. Thankfully, they're okay, because that was not good. And I hate seeing stuff like that. So, an unfortunate ending to the match, but hopefully with a happy ending. Backstage, Paul Heyman tried to cover for the fact that nobody wanted to tag with the Bloodline. He came into the Bloodline locker room, Jimmy and Solo, or Jimmy, wanted to know what's going on. Do we have somebody? Do we not have somebody? And Heyman said, well, there's no man in this building worthy of teaming with the Bloodline. He goes, you're going to be okay. Jimmy said he was worried. Solo said he wasn't worried. And so Jimmy changed his tune and says, well, then I'm not worried either. And it was supposed to be Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight against Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso and a third man, but barely no third man. But as Orton was coming out to make his entrance, Solo and Jimmy, they ambushed him from behind, and Solo delivered a Samoan spike to take out Randy Orton. So this ended up being mostly a regular tag team match. It was AJ Styles and LA Knight taking on Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa. The wind. The wind is whipping outside and blowing the plastic all out on the window, man. It is nasty outside. It is nasty outside. But we're still connected, so that's all that matters. The electricity is still working, thankfully. Knight and Styles, they could not agree over who was going to start the match, and so Jimmy jumped LA Knight, so he was the one. He was the one by default who ended up starting the match. Knight hit a neck breaker, Styles tagged in, and he and Knight hit a double back elbow. Knight tagged back in after a few strikes from AJ. He went back to work in the corner on Jimmy. Styles tagged in, and he dumped Jimmy on the outside of the ring. Solo entered the ring, and both Knight and Styles hit him with chops. They sent him to the floor as well. So while the Bloodline regrouped, we went to a commercial break. Solo was in control when the show came back. Jimmy took some free shots while AJ was near the heel corner, and then he tagged in, and Styles knocked him down with a back fist. Solo went back to attack LA Knight on the outside to prevent him from making the tag. Knight got back up on the apron, he reached for the tag, and AJ just stared at him, and he was all hesitant and all pissed off, because he thought, he didn't see that, so he just thought that Knight was trying to screw him over. It's like, where were you? And Knight is trying to explain the situation here. In all of this, Jimmy went for a super kick. He ended up hitting Knight by accident. And then Styles and Jimmy collided with the double crossbody. Shockingly, I know you're going to be surprised by this, but Randy Orton made his triumphant return to save the day. He came down to the ring. He tagged into the match. He knocked Solo from the apron. He caught Jimmy with a snap power slam. He went for a draping DDT. Orton ate a super kick from Jimmy, but then he dropped Jimmy with an RKO, and he pinned him to win the match for the babyfaces. So after the match, Solo attacked Orton. Styles hit a phenomenal forearm to take him out. Knight then hit the BFT, and Orton hit the RKO. They threw Jimmy into the timekeeper's area. They gave Solo the old triple threat powerbomb, the shield, triple powerbomb. Roman Reigns is very familiar with that. They powerbombed him through the announce desk to close out the show. All three stood side by side while Orton looked down at Solo Sikoa and said, screw his big ass. And those were the parting words as SmackDown went off the air. The main event was fine. It was not great. It was fine. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. It built to the big Randy Orton return that everybody wanted to see. Everybody wanted to see Randy come back out. Everybody wanted to see Randy hit the RKO, and that's exactly what he gave them. Heyman told his phone at the end, he was standing in the aisle, he told his phone to call Roman Reigns. How exciting. You know what I could use? I could use another year of Paul Heyman talking into his phone and telling his phone to call Roman Reigns. Isn't that fun? Isn't that exciting to you? I think we need another 12 months of that. How does that sound? And there are people, there are actually people who want to see this. There are people who want this to continue on for another year. This is what they want. They want Paul Heyman on television on most weeks to be talking into his phone and telling his phone to call Roman Reigns. This is exciting television for them. There are people who are perfectly okay with that. Thank God they're not booking this show. And with some common sense and any luck, it will be over at WrestleMania 40. But that is how SmackDown went off the air. Now, SmackDown next week is the second to last edition before the Royal Rumble. We have Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, LA Knight, and AJ Styles, and a contract signing for the Royal Rumble. Logan Paul is going to be back to be on the Kevin Owens show, and they have a women's tag team title match next week. Katana Chance and Caden Carter are coming over to the Blue Brand to defend their belts against Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. So that will be on next week's show. 78% of you so far and counting have given SmackDown tonight from Nebraska a 78% thumbs up score, 22% thumbs down. So get those votes in on Twitter.
Look, everyone, it's Samoa Bro.
Samoa Bro, you two are invited to head on over to Twitter and vote. Let me know what you thought of tonight's SmackDown show. Even Samoa Bro himself can cast his vote. Everybody is eligible to vote except for me, because that wouldn't be very fair, now would it? All right, let's take a look at your Super Chats. By the way, the goal for Be the Booker tonight was 400. We are currently at 365, so we're not there yet, but go ahead and hit that thumbs up if you have not already done so before we get on out of here. We got to get through some of your messages first. We got to kick... Oh, my God. We got to kick things off here with Lady Fire Panda. That's what we need to do. Get them on in. Get those questions on in here. You could be fined by Brian Danielson, just like Barry. Fire Panda says, screw Cody, screw Punk. The only person who should be winning the Royal Rumble is the greatest pro wrestler alive today, the one and only Jinder Mahal. Hashtag, don't hinder the Jinder. Get her out. Get her out. She's a mod. Well, I guess I didn't think that one through. Can you ban yourself? Lakers Pats, Jinder has a January 4th, 1999 Mankind title moment. How about no? How about that? I like that idea better. DEH Sires, assuming that she is clear, Dakota being the one to eliminate Bayley would be the perfect turn leading to Becky winning. I think that would be the right way to go. If Dakota is cleared in time for the Rumble, let her be the one to dump out Bayley. Because it's either Becky or Bayley winning the Rumble. Like, they have these betting lines on the Royal Rumble, and I tend to stay away from it because, especially when we get closer to the show, if there are any spoilers, I don't look at them. But I saw Jade Cargill's name. She's apparently, like, the second most favored winner in the Women's Royal Rumble match. Jade Cargill to win the Royal Rumble? I don't see that at all. To me, it's Becky or Bayley. I mean, I could see Jade being in the Rumble, but Jade winning the Rumble? I don't see that at all. Brian H. DeGreen Boy, tonight's show was pretty good. I love the subtle hint of Butch returning to being Pete Dunne. Talk about long overdue. Yes, indeed. Prince Vegeta 95, currently snowed in, rewatching The Last of Us. Fuck snow and Kevin Dunn. Happy Friday to all. I think The Last of Us deserves a rewatch as well. I think I might do that myself soon. It's one of my favorite shows. Got screwed over at the awards last week. Very, very sore about that. Chris Lloyd, damage control. They're going to kick Bayley out. I loved how they didn't help her during the match, and then they walked away in the back. I think either Bayley wins or they kick her out after the Rumble. I agree. It's one or the other. But I like the idea that was just pitched. Was it DEH? Yeah, it was DEH. About Dakota, if she's cleared, she could be in the Rumble and she could be the one to eliminate Bayley. If she's not winning, I kind of like that idea. Daniel Tucker, thank you for the $20. Daniel, who do you think Aldis will wrestle when he does wrestle? Could be as simple as Randy. I think it could be. I think it could be as simple as Randy Orton. I mean, I can't give you an answer other than Randy. Randy's the only one that's been even subtly teased. I mean, otherwise, it's just me guessing who it could be. And, you know, if I had to venture a guess, if not Randy Orton, I could see somebody, you know, heel like a Grayson Waller or an Austin Theory, somebody like that. You know, I could see it being a person like that. Bleed Boston. Bayley, Becky, Sasha, Charlotte. What's your 1-4 all time? Oh, you want me to rank the horsewomen? Is that what we're doing here? Well, for me, I would go Sasha 1. I'd go Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, Bayley. I think in that order. You could argue Charlotte number 2. But I think for me personally, I'd go Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, Bayley. Chris AXC, could we be getting Aldis against Roman eventually? Well, if he starts wrestling, sure. Yeah, it's possible. Probably not on a pay-per-view, but I could see that being maybe a TV match. DEH Sires, WWE informed that Theory and Melo are okay. I did mention that before. So if you're coming in late, and if you did see that botched spot from their match earlier where it looked like they broke their necks, they are okay. Chris AXC. Sid got screwed in the 92 Rumble. Who are you rooting for to win the Rumble in 92? And thoughts on Sid in the Hall of Fame? Why isn't he already? I don't know. Sid should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he will be one day. As far as who was I rooting for in the Royal Rumble, that's a very interesting story. I will tell you the story as quickly as possible. I think I've told the story before. At the time, I was in school, and there was a recess at one point, and a couple of people from my class piled into a phone booth. All you young people out there, there used to be these things called phone booths. Like a public phone that you could use. You put a quarter in, you call somebody. I know this is a foreign concept. So they had a phone booth in the school. And it's a small booth and got like 5 people are crowding around this phone booth. And I'm eavesdropping. I'm trying to figure out what it is that they're doing over there. And I overhear them talking and somebody says Ric Flair is going to win the Royal Rumble. And I'm thinking, how the hell do they know that? Well, they called one of the wrestling hotlines. I didn't know from the fucking wrestling hotlines in 1992. But they called something, and they seemed to know that Ric Flair was going to win the Royal Rumble. So that weekend for the Royal Rumble, I'm over at my grandparents' house because they had cable. We didn't. And there's a bunch of people there. My father is there with me, my grandfather, a couple of other people. And he's like, who do you think is going to win the Royal Rumble? And I said, Ric Flair is going to win the Royal Rumble. And they said, nah, Hogan's going to win. I said, okay. Sure enough, Ric Flair won the Royal Rumble. And I sounded like the smartest guy in the room. I was like so impressed with myself, even though I didn't do anything. But so who was I rooting for to win the Royal Rumble? Ric Flair, because I wanted to be proven right. And I was. And that was my first exposure to hotlines, dirt sheets, or anything like that. It all traces back to the 92 Rumble. Now, of course, if you were a little bit older and you were following the storylines logically, you would probably be able to figure out that Ric Flair is probably going to win the Royal Rumble. But they all thought Hogan was going to win. Maybe they were all just stupid. Very possible. There are certainly some members of my family who would qualify. But anyway, Rob G., which Alliance heel turn was worse, Austin or Kurt? Austin. Austin. Both. Because Austin had two heel turns in 2001. So I would say Austin both times. The Juliet. Becky tried to cut Bianca's braid before WrestleMania 38, and it backfired on her with her own haircut. You know, I completely forgot about that. So thank you for reminding me. Nico. Is it Nico or Nico? We'll call you Nico. Nico sounds cool. $9.99. Solo, settle a bet. WrestleMania 36. Drew won the title. The next night on Raw, it was shown a match between Drew and Big Show that took place later on that same night. Is that considered the actual WrestleMania main event? Yes. The actual legitimate WrestleMania 36 main event is Drew McIntyre against the Big Show. Technically, that was the main event of WrestleMania. Fahad, again, thank you for the $58. Appreciate that very much. Nico with another $9.99. I'll make you a bet. If you make a LA Knight imitation for one of your super chats, in 10 years, I will grow up to become a wrestler and get you front row seats to WrestleMania 50. How about this? How about I don't do that, and you grow up to become a wrestler and you get me tickets to WrestleMania anyway? How about that? I like that better. The Winston Slip, Consolo Monster, and Brian Zane, please review Mr. Nanny. I'll leave that to Brian. I'll let Brian take care of that. See, I'm more of a Suburban Commando guy myself. Nick Grasso with the $9.99. Cora Jade suffered a knee injury at the NXT live event tonight as she was wrestling Lyra Valkyria. The match was stopped, and she had to be carried out by four officials, so hopefully she is not hurt too bad. That is never a good sign. That's never a good sign. So two injury scares tonight for WWE, one on the main roster and one in NXT. I hope she's okay. Annis says, Jinder. And he has a crown. Hey, Annis, thank you for the $19.99. I'll tell you what, Jinder could be king of the ring, but he ain't going to be the world heavyweight champion. So you can give him that crown, but he is not going to get the belt. Hoffman Entertainment. Heyman talking into his phone equals compelling television to some. I guess so. I don't know who these people are, but apparently it's compelling television to some people. Apparently it does not take much to entertain some of these people. Barry MK. What was the better match? Kurt Angle against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 19 or Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21? Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21. ABK, again, man, what can I say? How about, you know what? If I scroll back down here, Annis put a little crown in his super chat. I'm going to take that crown away from you, Annis. I'm taking it away from you and Jinder, and I am giving it to ABK. ABK is the new king. Zay 97, Roman against The Rock against Cody at Mania. Rock eats the pin. I'm going to talk about that on Sunday. You know, if they're going to do a triple threat match, you may as well just do Rock and Roman. Just do Rock and Roman then. Just do Rock and Roman. You don't have to muddy the waters by doing a triple threat match. If you want to do Rock and Roman, just do Rock and Roman. That's it. BCOM see clearly, AEW and WWE presents a truce. PLE pay-per-view? Yeah, maybe. And then you'll wake up. Then you'll wake up. Tell me how the rest of the dream goes, though. I would love to know how Triple H and Tony Khan are going to politically coexist when they book the winners of those matches on that show. Tell me how that works out. BCOM C clearly also says 7-match show, and the main event is the Blackpool Combat Club against the Bloodline 5-on-5 tornado tag team match. And now you pick the 6 other match. I'm not going to do that. Although the one match I would like to see, though, now that Will Ospreay has signed with AEW, is Will Ospreay against Seth Rollins. Get those two guys in the ring together. That's a match I would have liked to have seen. Savon Watson. Becky Lynch once tried to cut Bianca's hair before, and it did not work out well for her. Love your reviews and podcasts. Been a fan since the TV Tracks days. Savon, thank you. I was just reminded of that angle by somebody, which, again, I had completely forgotten about. But thank you, brother. Appreciate all the help. Keeping this show going over all these years, going back to the Tracks days. Kung Fu Joseph, my second super chat. Been a fan since 2015. TV Tracks, I've got another Tracks disciple. Look at this. Tell you what, we got a lot of people who discovered the podcast by those clips that he used to put up. Who are your top three choices to dethrone Gunther? Man, I'm still sticking with the Chad Gable story. I still think there is a story to be told there if they tell it, if they tell it properly. I don't know if they will or not. So he has to be on my list. I think that Sami Zayn, if they're going to keep the title on him for an extended period of time, I think Sami Zayn is somebody that deserves consideration. I think that could be the matches, I'm sure, would be fantastic. So I would have him on the list as well. And if I had to go with a third person to dethrone Gunther, it would be Sheamus. I'm sticking with Sheamus. In fact, somebody wrote into the mailbag, and I'm going to include his question on the podcast on Sunday. I got some good ones, too. So again, if you want to email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com, I'll talk about his idea on Sunday. I really like it, and it would be a good way to get back to Sheamus and Gunther. As early as WrestleMania, as this upcoming WrestleMania, and I like the idea a lot. So those would be my three. Gable, Sammy, Sheamus. I would be okay with any of those three. Somebody said Ilya Dragunov. He's not going to have the title long enough for it to be Dragunov. Dragunov is not going to sniff the main roster for a while. And I don't want to see Gunther have the belt for as long as Roman Reigns has had the Undisputed title, because Gunther at some point this year needs to move on to contend for the World Heavyweight title. Certainly, I think no later than Bash in Berlin, which is at the end of August, he should be, if not champion, challenging for the World Heavyweight title. By the time Ilya Dragunov gets called up to the main roster, Gunther will probably already be the World Heavyweight champion. So no, I do not see Ilya Dragunov being the one to dethrone Gunther. So, Joseph, thank you for the super chat. There's a Solo McMahon right there sniffing his millions. It's all that ABK money right there. Sniffing all the ABK money. We got some more coming in here. And then we will get to be the booker, because you guys got me to the goal tonight. Although I said I want to get 500 now, and we are up to 439. So I don't know if we're going to get there or not, but BCOM C clearly says, I still think you did something to TV Tracks. Well, you got me. Once I decided that I was going to start putting the clips up on my own channel, I basically I kidnapped him, and I'm not going to tell you where he is located. Only that he has been relocated out of the country with a family that loves him very much. Justin G with the $5 super chat. I gave up on getting the sound off on Deezer, but it works on Spotify. Why couldn't Google Podcast stay on? Thank you, Solomonster, and the mods and the chat. Yeah, as of April 2nd, I believe is the date, Google Podcast is no more. They will not be pushing out any new episodes of anyone's podcast. They're discontinuing Google Podcasts. So a word to the wise, if you are somebody that uses Google Podcasts, be aware of that. And you have plenty of time between now and then to find yourself a different platform. A lot of people listen on Apple Podcasts. In fact, the vast majority of the people who listen to the podcast, that's where they get it. Spotify would probably be number two. And there are tons of other platforms. You can do it right from the Spreaker app. I mean, that's certainly the one to do if you want to help out the show. Makes us look good to Spreaker. But you got plenty of ways to get the podcast, Spotify being one of them. Lovelie, since you carry water for WWE. Oh, wait, let me get my water. This is my water for WWE. This is my water for AEW. So, yes, I'm carrying water for both as I answer this question. Why aren't you the tribal chief? Well, that's a damn good question. I am technically a part of a tribe, but yes. Sometimes I forget which one I'm carrying water for. So I just hold them both, so that way we don't have to worry. So there you go. Always carrying water. One day I'm talking about Triple H, and I'm kissing his ass, and then the next day I'm kissing Tony Khan's ass. I'll tell you what, if I'm going to be kissing somebody's ass, it ain't going to be Tony Khan or Triple H. I think we can agree on that. It definitely won't be those two guys. That's for damn sure. Anyway, Justin G just gifted a super chat to Tim. Justin, thank you. B-Com says, can you give me 3 cross-promotion dream matches, 1 women's, 1 tag, and 1 singles? I mean, I'm sure I can. Again, you're putting me on the spot here. I don't know. I mean, as far as the women's, I mean, on the women's side, we'll do women's. As far as like an inter-promotional match, I mean, she's not technically part of a promotion, but we were supposed to get a Mercedes and Julia match, and we never got it. So would that count? I guess it depends where Mercedes ends up. Because that's a match I would like to see. If I had to go really interpromotional, though, I would love to see Asuka and Julia go one-on-one. That might not happen, though. That's a whole other story. I know Asuka is not very fond of Joshi wrestling. But that would be another one. As far as on the tag team end of things, I mean, you could take FTR and stick them in the ring with pretty much, I mean, my God, pretty much anybody. You want to put FTR in the ring with the Usos? I'm talking current FTR. I'm not talking when they were doing that stupid angle where they were spying on them in the shower or whatever dumb shit Vince McMahon had them doing. Remember that whole thing? Right? They had like hairy backs or something, and the Usos were filming them secretly in the showers, which sounds like it would be against the law. But, yeah, no. Modern-day FTR against the Usos would be a fun match. Jamie Hayter, absolutely. Put Jamie Hayter in the ring. But you know what? Jamie Hayter and Rhea Ripley, that is a damn good match. Jamie Hayter and Rhea Ripley. That would be a match I would like to see. You could do Kenny Omega and Roman Reigns. I mean, you could... How about Okada and Roman Reigns? What kind of match do you think those two would have? How about MJF? Right? MJF and Roman Reigns? Maybe CM Punk and Kenny... never mind. Base Beerus says Solo Aquarius. All right, then. I don't know what that means, but there you go. Danielson against Punk. You know what? It sucks we never got it in AEW. They wanted to work together, and they just never had the chance. He fucked it all up. Anyway, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Oh, ABK. ABK, I don't know, man. Danielson's about to retire this year. You want to put him in the ring with Gunther? As injury-prone as he's been over the past couple of years, you want to put him in the ring with Gunther? Now, that would be a hell of a match. Gunther against Bryan Danielson. Gunther against anybody in New Japan, man. Gunther against Okada. Gunther against Shingo. Sign me up. Jericho against NDA. All right, here we go. Men's be the booker. We're going to kick things off with the tag teams. All right, hey, you know what? Be calm. You want some matches here? I'll tell you what we're going to do. He wants to know what kind of cross-promotional matches I'd like to book with the tag team and the men and the women. Consider be the booker my choices. These are my choices. I have to commit to these choices here. I'm going to give you those three matches that you asked me for. And we're going to start out with Rey and Dominic Mysterio. Look at this little brat here. Has there been a more jarring transformation than the transformation of Dominic Mysterio to what we see in this image to what we have today in the Judgment Day? Rey and Dominic Mysterio. It's going to be Rey and Dominic taking on Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page. The Elite. Rey and Dom against the Elite. It's a pretty damn good fucking match right there. I'm not talking about Dominic back when he was teaming with Rey. I'm talking about Dominic now. That's a great match, though. We're starting out hot. Here we go. Ladies, be the booker. Here we go. We begin with Sable. Sable. Not exactly the most accomplished in-ring performer. And yet a former women's champion. Brian was eating dinner when he saw the Hogan Wrecking Ball Super Chat. Brian, he was eating dinner. Now he's seeing his dinner in front of him on the table. Come back up. Sable gonna go one-on-one with Queen Zelina. I'm sorry, Zelina, but not even you can make that a worthy match. Well, I'll tell you what, that is not an interpromotional match I would have liked to have seen. So now we go to the main event. We go to the main event. It is going to be Matt Cardona, the Indie God, the King of the Deathmatch, the Broski. Matt Cardona, one-on-one in your main event. I should probably take this for a spin first. With Jay Briscoe. Jay Briscoe, you know, today's January 13th. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Monday, I could be wrong, but I think Monday would have been his birthday. But this is also right around the time 1 year ago, I think almost to the day that he passed away. So it's hard to believe it's already been a year. But Jay Briscoe against the Deathmatch King would have been a wild match. Any kind of match like that, you put him in there, you know it's going to be wild. You know it is going to be wild. There he is in his left hand, one of the old House of Glory tag team belts. We have much nicer belts now. But he was one half of the former House of Glory tag team champions. And one of the great thrills for me in all the matches I've had the opportunity to do commentary for as a commentator with House of Glory is to call several Briscoe's matches, but to have been able to call Jay Briscoe's final ever match is something that is a very special thing for me. And I wish that wasn't the case. You know, a lot of people talk about the double dog collar match against FTR as being the Briscoe's final match. In a major national promotion, yes. But technically, their actual final match was the match that JD and I got to call at the House of Glory show when they lost the tag team titles to main event, Jay Lyon and Midas Black. So he is definitely missed. Base Beer says Aquarius, the water bearer. Oh, that's where, okay. Yeah, that's where the solo Aquarius, I get it now. Drew against Takeshita. Oh my God. I mean, Takeshita against anybody. Takeshita against anybody would be phenomenal. Darby against LA Knight. Who you got? Darby against LA Knight. I'm going Darby Allin. So this Wednesday will be 1 year since Jay Briscoe passed away. Yeah. His birthday is on the 25th, someone said. I was off by a little bit. I knew his birthday was, I think, shortly after he passed away. I know it was very close together. You know, I still remember that. I was doing a watch-along. I think I was doing a watch-along for the 30th anniversary of Monday Night Raw. And I was live on YouTube when I got the news. Like, you guys were going crazy in the chat, and that got my attention. I'm sitting here watching Raw from January of 1993, trying to have a good time with you guys. And I look over and I think, okay, somebody's trolling. Like, what a terrible thing to say. And then, you know, in the middle of this live stream, I'm like finding out, like all of you were, that Jay Briscoe had passed away. So that was not a very fun stream. All right, it is getting nasty outside. I'm going to be live with you again on Monday for the Raw review. But first, on Sunday, will be episode 843 of The Sound Off. And on episode 843, I'm going to be talking about the Tony Khan Twitter situation from this week. I've not commented on this much at all. I've been saving my thoughts for Sunday. Unless he decides to go on a Twitter binge again between now and then. We'll talk about that on Sunday. I have a lot of thoughts about that. And also this whole Roman Reigns Rock situation and Sting's final match against the Young Bucks. I got thoughts on that and how things I think may go down at Revolution. And a big fat mailbag answering your questions. So if you have submitted a question to me recently, you might just hear about it or hear it answered on Sunday. Can't guarantee it, but it's possible. So definitely check out episode 843. That'll be coming up. Bobby Means with the $5 super chat says, due to AEW's lack of story in the women's division, if Mercedes Moné goes there, then she is screwed big time. I hope she goes back to WWE. If you ask me where I would rather see her, I really would rather see her under Triple H and not Vince McMahon working for WWE again. She would have a lot of new faces, though, to work with in AEW. And like you said, though, it's just a matter of the focus on story when it comes to the women's division. Because the women's division in AEW, on the podcast last weekend, not even a week ago, I ran through all the names, most of the names on the women's roster, right? They have a ton of names. Tony Storm and Mariah May, and they're going to get Jamie Hayter back. They just got Thunder Rosa back. You know, I mean, Athena is not on the AEW roster, but she should be. You throw her in there. They just signed Deonna Purrazzo, and they've just got so much talent, and it seems like very little time is dedicated to that talent on their main show on Wednesday nights. That's something that would have to change if he brings in Mercedes. You're not going to bring in Mercedes and keep the women to 1 7-minute match every Wednesday, right? There's going to have to be a real philosophy change in how Tony Khan books the women's division if he brings her in. She could be a game changer for that division. I don't know that she's going to be a game changer because nobody else has been a game changer. Deonna Purrazzo is not going to change the game. Saraya came in. People were like, oh, she's a game changer. No, she's not. Mercedes could be. Is she going to be given the opportunity to be? I don't know. I hope so. I would certainly hope that if he brings her in, he recognizes the value in using someone like her to try to lift up the entire division, but it's just not a priority for him. So, me personally, I'd love to see her get another shot at WWE, this time under Triple H and not Vince McMahon. But she would have more fresh faces to get in the ring with if she went to AEW instead of working with Bayley and Bianca and Asuka. Because, yes, we have seen that before. But I still would rather see her in WWE. Because I just don't have the faith in Tony Khan to utilize her to her full potential. I just don't. He has not yet demonstrated to me that I should have that faith in him when it comes to the women's division. Base Beer says, I'm surprised they never brought back the Belfast Brawl. Finn, Sheamus, etc.
Woo-wings!
Hey, Base Beerus, thank you. Enjoy your woo-wings. Yeah. I mean, it's a gimmick match. They can bring it back anytime they want. So, I don't know. Probably get it at some point. I mean, what were the matches that they did with the big beer kegs at ringside? There was a name for it. They did something similar to that not too long ago on SmackDown with Sheamus and Drew. I just can't remember the name of it. They gave that match a name, and I don't remember what it was. Hey, Juan Ocampo has been a channel member for 12 months. That's 1 year. Hey, Juan, thank you. He's got the red skull. Buy, rent, sell, regardless of what pay-per-view it happened on. Best feel-good moment for a WWE title win. Jeff Hardy at Armageddon, Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30, or Eddie Guerrero at No Way Out 2004. For me, I am going to go Bryan at WrestleMania 30, Eddie at No Way Out, and I'll sell on Jeff Hardy at Armageddon. They were all great moments, but if I had to rank them, that's how I rank them. I go Bryan first. I might be partial because I was in the Superdome, so I got to feel all that energy. And I, Lord knows I was ranting about that whole storyline for months up until the point that they actually gave us the big payoff at the end. So, I mean, how could that not be my first choice? The Eddie moment was great, though. I mean, the Eddie moment was a very emotional thing. I mean, you could even throw Kofi in there and his big win at WrestleMania 35. That was a big moment, too. Very emotional. You know, for a lot of, I was in the stadium for that too. I've been very blessed to be in the building for a lot of these big matches and these big moments. And I can tell you that that was definitely an emotional thing for a lot of people who were in MetLife Stadium that night. Kofi Mania and the whole build to that. That was a big moment. And then him with his, you know, his son was in the ring throwing t-shirts out to the crowd. It was great. It was great. Yeah, Angle at Unforgiven 01. That was a few weeks after 9/11. And they had him in the ring. Everybody had him on their shoulders. His family was there in the front row. Yes, the Donnybrook. That's what it was. A good old-fashioned Donnybrook. That's what they were calling it. We had a couple of those on TV in the past year. So the good old-fashioned Donnybrook is sort of the spiritual successor to the old Belfast Brawl. Uffman has been a channel member. Oh boy, Juan, he's topped you, man. He's been a channel member for 33 months. 33 months, baby. I, too, discovered you via TV Tracks. 2024 is 10 years of me listening to you. Uffman, very happy to have you as part of our little family here. You know that. Turtlehead, no, you were in the Silver Dome, brother. Oh, that's right, I forgot, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. It's the Silver Dome, not the Super Dome. It's the Silver Dome. I still love how on Raw the next night, Paul Heyman's in the ring with Brock. It was the night after they broke the streak. And Heyman just starts going off on Michael Cole and JBL, those two things that call themselves announcers. And he's talking about WrestleMania, and he goes, in the Superdome, Hogan, not Silverdome. Just fucking buried him. That was great. That was great. And then later in the show, Cesaro, right, hot off his Andre Battle Royal win, comes out, ditches Uncle Zebekiah, Zeb Coulter, whatever gimmick name you want to use for him. Picks Paul Heyman as his new manager. Everybody in the building goes nuts. Another show I was there for. And you're thinking, man, this is going to be great. He won the Andre Battle Royal. He body slammed the Big Show out of the ring. Everybody went nuts. Now they're putting Paul Heyman with him. Paul Heyman is the guy who just managed Brock Lesnar in his win over The Undertaker. What a big endorsement this is going to be for Cesaro, man. This is going to be a big turning point for him. And then nothing. Not a fucking thing. Only for Paul Heyman many years later to admit at some one-man show that he did that they never put him with Cesaro to push Cesaro. That was not the reason why they did that. The reason they put him with Cesaro was because Brock Lesnar was going on vacation again, and they didn't want people to forget the fact that Brock is the one in 21-1. And so they said, well, we'll put you with Cesaro. That gives you a reason to be on TV every week so you can come out and go, Brock Lesnar is the one in 21-1. And meanwhile, Cesaro is in the background, just like an idiot, just standing there. Terrible. Terrible. Brock Lesnar and Cesaro could have been a hell of a fucking match. And I'm still pissed we never got it. He wouldn't have won. But you can't tell me that watching him do power spots with Brock would not have been fun to watch. Can't believe we never got that. Cameron Spencer, what WWE wrestler could you beat in a fist fight? Well, I know I can beat that Orange Cassidy clown in a fist fight. As far as WWE, which WWE wrestler can I beat in a fist fight? We talking main roster? I don't know. They got some big dudes on that main roster. I wouldn't want to pick a fight with Gunther. I wouldn't want to pick a fight with Drew McIntyre. I'll go CM Punk. How about that? My plan would be I would walk up to him with a plate of muffins to distract him, and then I would fling them up at his face, and then I would double leg him to the ground, and then I would do the ground and pound. That's what I would do. BCOM, see clearly, heel turn, FYI, Dominic can't wrestle. Now, Dominic can wrestle. I got news for you. Dominic has wrestled more than anybody else in the entire company in the past year. Between Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, he has more ring time than any other person. And only way you can get better is by working in the ring, and nobody has worked more than him. So he has definitely improved from where he was at the beginning. I don't think that's a bad faith argument right there. Rumpelmane, I don't know. You would have to ask her. I'm not going to read that. You would have to ask her. I don't know why you think I would know the answer to that question. Luis says, SmackDown was snore tonight. Thank you, Dwayne, for infuriating Roman Reigns, who already has the winged dragon of Ra up his ass. The winged dragon of what? The winged dragon of Ra? Is that a Yu-Gi-Oh reference? I've told you, I don't know this Yu-Gi-Oh stuff. Swerve when I drive there. Luis, thank you for confusing me as always. And Base Beerus, solo against Shane on Hog Underground. Yeah, Shane McMahon and his phantom punches. If he's going to throw those punches, then yeah, I could probably take Shane. Shane is still recovering. He's still recovering from his torn quad. BCOM, see clearly, my prediction is he will be WWE champion one day. Fucked up my heel turn. He's talking about Dominic, by the way. You know what? As young as he still is, you know what? I could see Dominic holding the big belt one day, but we're talking for like years down the road. But like Dominic as an Intercontinental Champion, Dominic as a United States Champion, that I definitely see. Roman is Kaiba? Solid Monster would throw a better punch than Shane, and you're not even a trained professional. It's all right, I'll talk to my boy Amazing Red, and I'll be like, Red, I need to be trained. I want to be trained by the best. I'll be trained by him. You give me 6 months, I'll be good to go. I'll learn from the best. I got that hog connection. We'll make sure I get trained the right way. Rumpelmane says Bianca Belair feet. He's back with the feet. I know what Rumpelmane's favorite finishing maneuver is. We know that. It's eat defeat. What is a Kaiba? Sito Kaiba? I don't know what that is. Dom will be a Grand Slam champion by the end of the decade. With all the titles he's won so far, you might not be too far off. Base Beerus, God of Seduction, says signs used to be wild in the Attitude Era. Lots of Eric Cartman dolls. They used to say mean things about Shawn Michaels. Oh yes. They used to say mean things about Shawn Michaels that I cannot repeat here. And Shawn Michaels would say equally mean things about them because that was Shawn Michaels. Okay, so Seto Kaiba. Okay. Seto Kaiba is one of the main good guys and bad guys in Yu-Gi-Oh! Good guy slash bad guy. I mean, which is it? So it's good guy slash bad guy. It was like Big Show. Did he turn back and forth? Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Hey, Justin G, have a good night, man. And Hebamaru, have a good night as well. Well, as I'm getting an education here, I'm going to let you guys go. Wherever you may be, hopefully if there is bad weather, stay safe. It is very windy and very rainy, but at least we're not buried in snow. I hear it's going to be snowing in Iowa this weekend, so. But I don't live in Iowa, so I don't have to worry about that. Oh my God, it's Winky with a $5 super chat. Obolisk the Tormentor in defense mode. Solo monster to the Shadow Realm. Obolisk. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. Obolisk, or is it Obolisk the Tormentor? Now I'm going to start calling him Luis the Tormentor because he torments me with all these Yu-Gi-Oh! References. Luis, you are now Luis the Tormentor. And Base Beerus says, Mae Young feet, says Snitsky. All right, well, we've officially gone off the rails. Be well. Stay safe. I would say the same thing to Theory and Carmelo Hayes if they were in front of you right now. For God's sakes, be well, stay safe. And check out episode 843. A lot to talk about on Sunday afternoon. The show will be dropping, and I'll see you guys back here for the live Raw review on Monday night. We'll start the week all over again. Until then, take care, guys.